New Minds AI. Eure wöchentliche Dosis KI mit Jens und Max. Seid dabei, wenn wir die Zukunft erkunden.
Moin und willkommen zu einer neuen Folge des New Minds AI Podcast, dem Podcast rund um das Thema KI. Und auf die heutige Folge habe ich mich echt gefreut, denn ich habe mit Logan Kilpatrick von Google gesprochen. Logan ist Lead vom AI-Studio in Google und war zum Zeitpunkt der Aufnahme gerade in Las Vegas, weil er auf der Google Cloud Next vor sehr, sehr vielen Menschen gesprochen hat und ein bisschen KI gezeigt hat. Und was ist so mit dem ganzen Thema generative KI, Modelle, Google, der Entwicklung bei Google, warum ist Google in den letzten Monaten so abgegangen, wie auch die Rolle von Entwickler und Entwicklerinnen sich verändern wird, werden wir bald alle Tools bauen. Ganz, ganz viele Sachen, die ich mit Logan besprochen habe, und ich wünsche ganz, ganz viel Spaß bei der Folge. Sie ist richtig cool und hat mir auf jeden Fall nochmal viele Ideen und auch gleichzeitig viele, viele neue Fragen gebracht. Also, let's go. So, Logan, welcome to the podcast and thank you so much for the time to be here. And let's start by asking, what felt more unpredictable, giving that live large language model output and demo at Cloud Next, or trying to explain when to use Der, Die, Das?
Yeah, that is, it probably is Der, Die, Das, to be honest with you. As someone whose German is nicht so gut, always one of those problems. So, yeah, all seems easy.
You stick to Gemini and LLM output. Cool. So, Your journey is quite a ride. So from NASA to OpenAI to Google, and what connects all these chapters for you personally? How did you come up with this kind of journey?
Yeah, I think it's one of those stories where, like, looking back, everything looks connected. I think at the time, it's like not explicitly clear that it's all interwoven together. But even back when I was at NASA and I started at NASA in like 2018 or something like that, maybe earlier. Late 2017, I was doing like early reinforcement learning stuff using Markov decision processes and partially observable Markov decision processes, which is like a way of representing action and state spaces so that to make decisions under uncertainty. So when I joined NASA, I was doing that work using an open source programming language called Julia, which got me into the open source community. And then, yeah, sort of that pushed forward into became a machine learning engineer, and then eventually was at another startup doing machine learning and deep learning for digital pathology, and then ended up at OpenAI, and then now at Google. So I think it actually has been this like very consistent machine learning AI thread over the last 8 years now or something like that, which has been really interesting. And also to just see the like evolution of the technology has been really interesting. Like AI.
Oh, yeah.
Machine learning 8 years ago is like a very different world than it is now. It was much harder to solve problems with AI and machine learning. You really had to like go and have a bunch of like bespoke data and took a lot of time and all that stuff. And I think today it's remarkable like how the opportunity space of problems that could be solved using AI, just like literally out of the box with some API or a local model or something like that. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy. And now 8 years into this whole AI machine learning space, beside the opportunities that you see, did it somehow change the view on AI? What is all going on when you're so close to all the labs and working so every day in, day out with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like I'm definitely, there's like some things where I probably feel the magic more than other people. I think there's other things where it's like I feel the magic less because I'm just thinking about it. And it's like the progress is hard to appreciate because like I see the blood, sweat, and like tears of all the human work and stuff like that to make the progress happen. So I think it is like it feels like both ends of the coin from that perspective. I'm continually, and I was actually having a conversation last night with Jack Ray, who's one of the leads for our reasoning efforts. And he was remarking about how for him coming to Mac Cloud Next right now and seeing sort of the progress across all of our customers and stuff like that, he said that, you know, 10 years ago when he was starting at DeepMind, he would never have guessed sort of the breadth of like how AI and machine learning are being applied to the world, like just how like truly varied the application spaces and how that has like differed from what the models are actually trained to do in a lot of cases. And like, if you're very close to the model training process, so like you actually see like what, how are the models being taught? What are they being taught to do? And if you look at the domain space of how they're being applied, it's like, like 10x probably, or many orders of magnitude, different use cases than what the models are like actually taught to do, which is just such an interesting like realization of like how well the current paradigm of language models generalize across all these domains, even for stuff that they weren't like explicitly taught to do.
It's crazy if you think about that. And now when you're working with that day in, day out, 24/7, what keeps you still curious about AI and stuff? Because I mean, you're overloaded with everything, more than everyone, every regular X user who's bombarded with all the FOMO stuff. What keeps you curious?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's so many. I'm always been very interested in solving problems, and it feels like there's so many problems to still be solved. And like, I just think about, you know, the last 2 years, just for me as a software engineer, has been like, oh, now I can go and tackle, you know, 10 to 20x harder problems, you know, probably 10x faster than I ever would have been able to before. And I think like that spread across every domain that I have any level of interest in, I think is just really, really cool. Like I also just fundamentally like building stuff. So I think it's like fun to be like, what is the new stuff that I can build? And there's so many, especially like early in the platform shift, which I feel like we are with everything that's happening in AI, it's like, everything's up for grabs. Like all these problems that businesses were solving for the last 20 years, like there's a massive opportunity to like go and do exactly what those companies were doing, do 10x more, have it all be powered by AI, and solve problems in like really, really interesting ways that weren't possible before. So it just feels like there's so many things to be built everywhere, which gets me excited as someone who loves building stuff.
Yeah, there's so many new domains that you can grab and get into, which weren't possible at all before. It's fascinating. So you still think it's early in the days for, let's say, problem solving with AI?
Yeah, and I think genuinely, I think a lot of this is just not actually driven by the AI progress bit. I think it's like there's this like pretty significant lag time between like the practical usage of AI and like where the frontier is. And I think like the frontier is going to keep pushing. I think we're going to keep seeing a ton of progress, new stuff, faster models, better models, smarter models. I think what lags behind that is like, in a lot of cases, value creation for the world. Like the model, like today's models are probably significantly more intelligent and potentially impactful for the world than the actual impact that the models are having on the world. And I think a lot of this is just an artifact of like, it takes time to build great products. It takes time for like the technology to be disseminated out into the world and like have a meaningful impact on people's lives. So I think we're going to continue to see that trend happen as the frontier continues to push. There's still going to be like at every like model class category that's happened over the last, you know, 3 years, there's all of these opportunities that have been spawned, and like the sort of outcomes of those opportunities are like still playing out. And even though the frontiers push forward, like there's still all these like really interesting products to be built or businesses to be created, which again gets me excited for startups. And I think I see this a lot today, which is, you know, companies trying to figure out like, how much do I stay on the frontier and like keep just like keep up with the progress for the sake of keeping up with the progress versus like, hey, I actually, you know, the AI solves this problem that I care about right now. Like, should I just go deep on fixing this thing and like build a business around this? And like, it is this interesting like trade-off and tension point, which is not clear to me that like we've had this sort of landscape of problem for builders to sort of think about how to make that trade-off.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically evaluating how intelligent do a tool need to be, which is crazy if you think about that. And you mentioned that the frontier will keep on pushing, and the humanity and the problem and the companies will always lag a little bit behind, also because products need time to build. But now with all this AI and product building stuff, do you think the gap will be smaller, or will it always be a human issue?
That's another good question. I think the gap is somewhat good in some contexts. I do think I could imagine, I buy the sort of idea that because we have these tools, it makes people a lot faster at being able to adopt the technology. I think the sort of caveat to that is, I think there's a lot of this, which is just like, you have to figure out through trial and error. And or if it's not trial and error, it's you need some sufficient amount of infrastructure to make this happen. And I look at the last like 2 years as an example of this. Like, you know, there was a ton of narrative last year that like AI is not actually being used in production. And all of these companies that are spending all this money on AI, like aren't building anything useful and putting it into production. And I think like the half truth of that narrative is like, in order for companies to reliably put AI into production, they have to have infrastructure to do that. And like, you know, if you look at the early set of all of the companies that were founded and created, like right in early or like late 2023, early 2023, it was lots of infrastructure companies because like that was the problem that that the world had was like, this technology is awesome, but I need reliable tools if I'm actually going to build something with it and put it into production. So I think, yeah, I think there's always, it depends on like how the model evolution happens. And I think a pertinent example of this is like, today, potentially reasoning models, like what is the sort of infrastructure that's needed to like build a great product around reasoning models? Maybe the answer is it's all the same infrastructure we already have today. But if it's not, then, you know, you're in this like chicken and egg situation where like someone has to build that infrastructure if all of these companies are going to take advantage of this new model capability. And I think we're going to keep seeing that like new model capability crank turn. Which means the infrastructure has to keep up with that, which I think is challenging in a lot of ways.
Yeah, definitely. And also for the human mind is basically challenging if you keep popping up new opportunities, new things that are happening. And it's not like a lab is going to announce, by the way, there's a model coming in the next, I don't know, 3 months and it has these capabilities. It's like popping up. Okay, by the way, we have this model. It's this much faster or more efficient or has this capabilities. And you're always overwhelmed with the possibilities there, basically.
That's a good idea, though. Maybe the future ends up being like labs. I think some of this is you don't fully know if everything's going to work. But like, sure. I do think there's a world where, you know, this is what the world ends up wanting from folks who are building AIs. Like, tell us the things that are coming because this is really important for the outcome of humanity and how the world builds products and things like that. So maybe we do end up in that world. I think that could be interesting.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be hard with the whole AI race theory, basically. Everyone's pushing for the number one spot.
So. I think some of this becomes, over time, I think it becomes less, I think there becomes more of a chance that people are willing to sort of plant the flag because they've like established themselves in the, I think like when you're early in, you know, a super competitive space, I think the dynamics look very different than sort of the middle stage or the later stage of a super competitive space.
Yeah, true. Good point. You make it super hard to choose the right questions because I have so many questions for you and you keep giving me new ideas for new questions. But let's talk a little bit about your role at Google, what you're actually doing. So you lead AI Studio. For the folks who have no idea what's behind the AI Studio of Google, tell us a little bit, what are you doing? What is the AI Studio from Google and whom is it for?
Yeah. Google AI Studio is sort of the fast path for developers to build with Google's generative AI models. So if you want to try Gemini and Veo and Imagen and some of our other sort of first party Google created generative AI models like Gemma as well, our open source model, Google AI Studio is the place where you can sort of go and experience those models. And then also get everything you need from a developer perspective to like actually go and build a product or service on top of those models. So we're a developer platform, I think is the easiest way of putting it. We have some features that sort of look like a traditional, you know, somewhat of a consumer product to sort of let you experience what the models are actually capable of. And this is how a lot of people try the latest Gemini models for the first time is we're a part of DeepMind. So we sort of are often the first surface to launch and bring some of the latest models to the world. So people come to AI Studio, they try the models, and hopefully the experience is, wow, these things are really impressive. They can do all this stuff that other models can't do. Let me actually go and build something with this technology. And we make that super easy. You can, you know, three clicks, grab an API key, go put it in your application and actually have Gemini power some of the experience. And AI Studio is free today, and you know, you can try all the latest models and it doesn't cost you anything, which I think is also super important as we're sort of early in this AI transitionary period. We want to make sure that folks have access to the latest technology, and it's not a barrier for them to show up and, you know, have to put a credit card in order to try the latest models.
Yeah, I find it fascinating how much free stuff is there in the AI Studio, and you keep pushing new options and new optimizations for the dashboard itself. So it, for me as a non-developer, it feels more and more like a good alternative to other tools that I actually use that are more looking like a consumer product. So really cool. I think everyone should give it a try. And you also, coming back to the beginning of our conversation, to Google Cloud Next. So you were on stage, you actually showed a use case with the AI Studio on stage live. And I have to ask, how many times did you test it? Were you a little bit scared that the output is somehow massively hallucinated, or did you test it? How many times? How was the feeling there?
Yeah, that's a good question. We definitely did that demo a bunch of times just as part of like the normal, you know, rehearsal process to make sure we told a coherent story to the world of why we were doing this example. I think the image that ended up being generated was, I think, not my favorite kitchen design. We showed, for folks who didn't see the demo, we showed sort of a Gemini's native image generation and editing capability. So we had a picture of Paige's kitchen. We had a prompt of like how we wanted to transform through the lens of like me and Paige prototyping like an AI renovation app. It's like super cool to see that you can try this today. If you go take a picture of your kitchen, you go to AI Studio, you select the native image generation mode in the model dropdown. You can have the model change the cabinets or redesign your floor or do the tiling, whatever it is. The model's really good at like this pointed changing of a specific image. So I didn't personally like the design. I think this is all goes back to like the, you know, there's a lot of taste and style involved. So we got lots of feedback from folks inside of Google about, you know, the model making either good design decisions or bad design decisions. Either way, it was super cool to see that use case. And yeah, as you sort of rerun the model every time, you get like different variants of this. So like it's a lot of, I think there's actually some really, really interesting companies to be built around this, the native image generation capability. And it actually, because it's Flash, it has this like the artifact of being really fast. So like you can like on stage, Paige and I were like going like multi-step iterating through like, hey, change this, let's change that, which I think was, yeah, so like a really interesting experience that I think for a lot of other models that have like a similar level of capability, it just like takes a long time to generate the image. So you lose a little bit of that like magic of like going back and forth with the model.
Yeah, I think everyone's aiming for quality. Of course, it's important to have a good quality in terms of image or general generation of video or images. But speed is also so important. If you're ending up to like a real-time image or maybe even video generation at some point, this changes a lot and gives so many new opportunities for new use cases. If you're instantly able to change, edit or something images. And also I find it fascinating how quickly you can also create multiple images just out of one prompt, like in story. I think you have also one example there. I used it to create a whole movie just with two prompts, had a real story that's connected together with real characters that are somehow quite similar. And this was really, really cool.
Yeah, people were generating like GIFs as well. You could have the model like generate like the different frames of a GIF or a GIF, and then use some external service to like take all the images and string them together into like an animated GIF or GIF. I got to say both to avoid the GIF wars or whatever it is.
I have no idea what's the correct one. Were you surprised when you released the feature, how many creative use cases came along that you haven't thought about?
There was definitely a lot of stuff that folks were very easy to create memes, which I thought was funny. Lots of people doing interesting stuff like that. I was less surprised, and it was more of like a great validation of, I think the folks on the team who have been doing that research, actually, some of them are at CloudNext right now presenting about that work. I think they've just been working super hard, and like that'd been a capability that we had had since December. So I was really happy that we got it out the door and got it into the hands of folks to start playing with and sort of experimenting with like what that it's like not the fully production ready version of that capability, but it's like a good look into like what the direction of this technology is going to be. So I think it was important from my perspective that we got it out into the world so that people can start seeing what's possible.
I think looking at the competitor landscape, it was also a good timing.
Yeah, it's funny how all of the competitors, I think it's like anything you release ends up somehow landing in some way relative to your competitors. But it is also funny like how, in many cases, like how unrelated like companies' release schedules are, and it just like ends up just because of the world and the moment we're in, it all ends up sort of landing in a similar way. So it was very interesting.
Yeah, that's true. But coming to my headline in the notes is actually with a question: why Google is cooking so hard? I remember maybe a year ago something, or maybe even a bit more. I think it's been a while since you renamed Bard to Gemini. I was like, okay, Bard. I made fun of Bard also publicly. Sorry for that. You, especially in the last months, you shipped so many cool features. ImageGen is impressive. Veo 2 is really impressive. I think I haven't seen that coming, to that Google is pushing out a video model in this quality, in this world understanding. Same with the audio thing that you released yesterday, I guess. Why is Google cooking so hard? What's happened in the last months compared to the Bard time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think my sort of general answer to this, and I think it's maybe... I don't know how folks react to this answer, but like I really think it's just a factor of time. Like I think to build great products, to build great teams, to build, you know, the right intuitions of how to build with it, like all of those things take time. And I think if you look at like the early innings of AI stuff, it's just like hard to there's so much like fog of everything that's happening. Like it's just not clear like what the right product experience is. It's not clear, you know, the direction you should be going from a research standpoint. It's not clear, you know, there's like so much uncertainty in how products are built and like what the right experience is for the world. And I think I have empathy for the Bard team, and a lot of those folks came over from Google Assistant. So like they were building like a very explicit version of what that product experience looks like, of sort of the prior generation of that product. And I think those folks like figuring out what this new generation of this type of assistant product can look like. And also just like across the stack, getting like all of the pieces lined up. Like I think there's like the product experience is one piece of it, but like, you know, it actually doesn't matter in a lot of cases if you have a good product experience or not, if you don't have the world's best models. And I think once you get like really, really competitive, high quality models, it is interesting like how much, you know, the product experience like still matters a lot. But in some ways, it's like matters a little bit less because you have such good models. Like the model sort of carries the weight of the experience, and it's like the novelty factor of whatever that product is. So there's like so many independent, like again, from the team perspective of like, how do you get large groups of people aligned and pushing on the same direction from a mission perspective? How do you get the right infrastructure stood up to like serve millions of users at scale and like actually bring the latest models to the world? And we're living through that right now with 2.5 Pro, where, you know, everyone in the world is showing up and saying, we want this model. It's incredible. It solves all of our problems. And trying to figure out, you know, given there was already an incredible amount of demand for Google's models, where do these, you know, where does the chips and the capacity just like materialize out of thin air? And the spoiler is it doesn't materialize out of thin air. You have to go and do a bunch of intentionally hard work to make that happen. So there's just so many dimensions of the problem space in AI today, which is really interesting. Like it's a very like full stack across every dimension of like how you need to solve a problem. But I think the cool thing is you get all of those things aligned, and then you have what happened, you know, in the last couple of months where it's like Google's just shipping a bunch of great product stuff and shipping a bunch of new models. And it's like every, you know, there's a lot of alignment on, you know, what the direction is that we're pushing and the sort of research path and the product path. And I think that's really cool. And it's just, yeah, the last couple of months has been a lot of fun to just see more stuff. And even in the next few weeks and months, we'll have even more stuff landing. So like there's a huge amount of progress, which is just awesome.
Yeah, so I'm also become more and more fan of your models, to be honest. I really like the 2.5 Pro, testing it compared to the other models. So I'm really impressed. So really cool work there. And so you talked a little bit about the models, just to get your thoughts around that. So we're seeing models that are getting bigger and bigger. Scale is hard for you as well, but still important. What kind of direction do you see? Do you think we're already at a point where models are capable of solving probably the most of the problems there? So we're aiming for more efficient models, smaller models, maybe also like the Gemma version, or do you think we still need more scale, more pushing towards that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we'll continue to see this, and this is like somewhat of a known thing across the ecosystem, is how scaling ladders work. I think we'll continue to see this. Like, I think it from a technology standpoint, it makes a ton of sense of like, let's push the frontier with the most capable model we possibly can. In a lot of cases, like at the cost of like how easy it is to scale that model up and how expensive that model is, because all that work, all that innovation, like trickles down through the entire stack of other models. So the better we make the 2.5 Pro model, the better the 2.5 Flash model is going to be, the better the Gemma models are going to be. So it is like, it's worth that level of investment, because you get it across all the other sides of the models. So I would expect that continues. I think there's a lot of like, you know, there's a lot of work scaling up reasoning, which is really interesting. I think there's a lot of work of like merging all the multimodality together into, you know, the mainline version of the model. So there's those dimensions. I think there's obviously Google's got a bunch of other models. So I think like in an ideal world, you bring all those capabilities into a single model. So I think there's just so much to do still. And it's also like it's not a trivial problem which is really interesting. And I don't know if folks have like thought about this challenge before, but like, oftentimes like new model capabilities, like don't come for free from the perspective of like, if you make the model, like the model's really good right now today at coding for 2.5 Pro. If all of a sudden you force 2.5 Pro to also become good at like generating images and, you know, generating audio, and a lot like the default state in most cases is that regresses other capabilities, which is really I was trying to think the other day of like, is this like intrinsically similar to how humans work? And I'm like, if I was a good artist, would I be worse at coding? Like my intuition is no, but like maybe that actually does happen in practice, where like you just can't be good at everything in life. But it is like there's a lot of work to make the model sort of horizontally good at a lot of different things. And it's just like a lot of effort to make, as new things come online, make them continue to be good at the things that they were good at before, push the frontier on those and good at the new things. So I think that's a lot of the work for the next few years, is like how to do that in a really tasteful way.
Super interesting. Especially also the multimodality. I think this opened up so many things, but people haven't thought about yet. For me, you're the model with the most multimodality capabilities, and it still feels like people don't use that enough. But everything is basically based on the transformer technology, roughly said. Do you see, in terms of scaling, that we're also getting the limits of the underlying technology that we have? I mean, reasoning is one thing, and probably you said in the next coming years there's still room for that, but do you see anything new or interesting on the horizon where you say, it's, without spoiling too much, there's a next level transformer? What to say, I think you had the Titan paper released a couple of months ago.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, from one perspective, the transformer has scaled incredibly well. Like, I'm not sure, you know, when the transformer paper came out in 2017, I don't think those folks realized like just how much the transformer was going to be able to scale. And obviously there's been like a lot of like, you know, most of the transformer stuff is like a derivative of that work. So the architecture has changed over time and stuff like that to continue to allow scale to happen and efficiency, et cetera. I wouldn't be like, I think this is one of the cool things about DeepMind is like at the same time that, you know, there's tons of really smart people thinking about like, how do we scale up, you know, the existing transformer architecture. There's also a ton of people who are thinking about like from a foundational research perspective, how do we keep doing what Google has done for the last, you know, two decades of doing foundational research on new algorithms, new techniques, et cetera, in order to make, you know, the next transformer level leap in how this technology works. So I'm super excited about that. I think there's tons of folks and pushing on the frontier of new ways of doing this stuff from either an efficiency standpoint or a scale standpoint. So I go to sleep well at night knowing that there's lots of folks at Google who are pushing on that problem.
That's good that you had a good night's sleep. I think that this is so fascinating. You get surprised sometimes when there's something new and you just puzzle it together and then it all makes sense. So really curious to see what's coming there. Let's shift a little bit from the hard models to actually the people. I mean, your bread and butter business, basically, beside posting on X, having taken care also about the community of developers. Now with this whole vibe coding, AI supporting code, do you see the term or the role of developers changing? I mean, I'm a marketer and I sometimes just paste stuff into Cursor, Lovable, also the Firebase Studio, to see what comes up to build ideas, basically, but I'm not the developer. Do you see also this changing?
It is definitely like mid shift of who is creating code as an artifact, which I think is really, really exciting as someone who is a developer, but has also like, you know, coding is not easy. I would love to build more stuff and have to spend less time doing it, through all those angles. I think it's like such an impactful opportunity for the world. The fact that more and more folks are able to like build stuff using code specifically. It is interesting that like this is actually not a unique story for coding. Like if you look at like what's happened using AI, like AI is this sort of general purpose up leveler of like every domain that humans are interested in across, you know, writing and, you know, research and creative tasks and now coding. Like I think the same thing basically became true from a writing perspective where like, you know, if you're not a great writer, you know, a year ago, you could have used any of the models that were available. And like, you basically can become like a world-class creator of content and sort of text-based artifacts. We saw this with creative tools where, you know, models like Midjourney and DALL-E and Imagine and others, you know, you can sort of become a world-class artist without actually having to, you know, have the sort of normal requirements of what that might look like. And now we're seeing this with code, which I think is also really exciting. I think the particularly interesting thing about code is just like the level of economic productivity that creating code as an artifact creates for the world. Like there is like this near infinite demand for software. And the cost today of software is actually really high. So you sort of marry those two things together as far as infinite demand and high sort of potential value creation for the world. It's this like beautiful thing where like now you can prompt a model and then have, you know, multi tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars of value created for you in, you know, the matter of minutes, which I think is like so, you know, I'm excited about like image models and text and all that other stuff. But I think like the creation of code is just like such a radically impactful outcome for the world. So I'm really excited. I think like for our team specifically building AI Studio, we think about this a lot because like our mandate is how do we provide this infrastructure for developers? And we spent a lot of time in the last few months thinking about like what actually is the mission of our team? Like, should we be expanding the scope of who we're trying to build for? And the answer was actually yes. So like we sort of redefined our mission to be building for AI builders, to be inclusive of folks who like traditionally wouldn't identify as developers. I think we're early in that. And like from a product perspective, like, you know, for the next year, you'll probably still see us looking like a developer platform. But I think like over time, you know, there's based on however many angles you look at it, there's maybe 20 to 50 million developers in the entire world right now, generously. I think with AI, we're going to see like many hundreds of millions of people creating code as an artifact. And the line between who's a developer and who's not is going to look pretty blurry. So I think more companies and products need to be set up for that world where there's lots of people doing that.
And it's so much fun. As I said, I'm not a developer, but having the capability of building ideas is amazing. So I learned so much building in the last couple of years, thanks to AI, which is incredible. But in a world where let's say I don't need to write code anymore, what's the real skill that's left there? Is it still that you think we still need people who understand code and write code actually? Will prompting be the most important skill, or will this also change?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's many dimensions to this. One, I still think like people who understand how code works and what's happening is going to be incredibly important. Like AI is not going to just like be able to solve every dimension of every problem. It will require human expertise in a lot of cases. I think the prompting piece is maybe like more generically, like I think about this as like it's like a very human skill set of like, how do you communicate what you want and like what you want to build and the idea that you have and all that stuff. So I think that's going to continue to be super important. I think the agency piece is like really interesting. Like there's lots of good threads on the internet, and this is something that I deeply believe, which is like, you know, basically with AI tools, you can go and solve any problem you want today. It's literally just a matter of like, are you willing to expend human energy to go and solve that problem? So I think there's like my challenge is like, I don't know how useful it is to tell people that that's the thing that they should be doing, because like, it's not something that like comes inherent. Like, I don't know, like there's no skill called agency. It's not like something you take a class on in school. So like, I don't have a good like tongue in cheek answer to that, but it really does feel like if you're someone who just like has energy to go and use AI tools, you can create a ton of value in the world. And like, if you don't have the energy or interest in using AI tools, like you're missing out on this huge value creation. So I don't know what the solution is from that perspective, but I think that's definitely something that like folks need to be thinking about. I think the flip side of that, just like my quick product wish is like, I think AI tools today like require this human agency. Like I have to go and like pull the value out of the models. And I think we're going to get more into a world where like the model is helping me pull the value out of the models. And like today it's like a very, like all of the work is on, like, there's no, like I'm sitting at my computer. I have tons of work that I need to do. Like I have to be the one to initiate all of those things. Like I don't have an army of agents. I don't have a bunch of like virtual, you know, assistants helping me do stuff. Like it's me sort of kickstarting every single little thing that I want. So I think the models having agency themselves and the systems having agency themselves to be able to help me on my behalf, I think is going to be a really interesting transition to see like how effective and useful that is for the world.
So basically more agentic, more agents in the world. Do you personally think that's on the near horizon? I mean, of course, building something and have the capability is one thing, but having it actually inside of businesses working, is it something you see in the next, I don't know, 2 years?
I think it should be like, so your point is right, which is like from a model capability standpoint, actually the models can do this right now. I think it's a question of like, how do you build the right product around this? And like, that's like still not a trivial problem to solve, like the right scaffolding in place to actually make this a useful product experience. So I'm hopeful, just because as someone who has too much work to do and not enough time in the day to do it all, I'm hopeful we have this in 2 years so that I can get more done and I can help create more value for the world. But I think we're getting there. Like, it's just a lot of like scaffolding problems. And we announced a bunch of stuff at Cloud Next to help sort of solve some of these problems. But I'm very excited. Also, just like personally, as someone who spends a lot of my time in, you know, I'm like a 3 hour a day Google Docs user. So like all of those, like it's also this interesting thing where like there are agentic products today, but it's like, are they connected to and using like the things that you use? Like maybe not. It depends on like what your personal technology stack looks like. And for me, it's like, there's lots of interesting AI tools out there, but not a lot of them like touch and talk to the technology stack that I'm using. So I'm hopeful that like that sort of horizontal layer gets built, and I'll have all the connections to the stuff that I'm using personally.
So to sum it all up, or to have like one quick question in the end, let's skim out 5 years from now, or maybe even 5 to 10. Is there one crazy thing that you could wish for, what could happen with AI, to really go crazy and predict something that maybe like, okay, might not happen. I don't see it today, but who knows? Is there something that you have in mind where you wish for? Is it like the robotic that takes care of every housework that you do? Is it like the email agent that answers all the emails for you and cooks for you? I don't know.
Yeah. I just actually got a really cool home robotic vacuum system that's like the next generation of some of the previous stuff. So I've been blown away by that. But even that, like, we're, you know, 5 years is a little bit ambitious just because it's like a manufacturer. It's actually like a manufacturing problem. Even if we had AI today, like, it's hard to make robots. It's not easy to scale them, all those problems. My guess is 5 years from now, like, every interface for technology in the world is sort of generating code on the fly on behalf of users, in all dimensions, like from, you know, you go and search for something on the internet, like instead of just giving you an answer, there's like a product or a tool that's built for you on the fly on your behalf, and you can just jump into that thing and start using it. So I would imagine there's like some variant of that of the future in 5 years, which is going to be awesome.
Oh yeah. There's so many things that I now think of. Well, Logan, I know you're busy, but thanks a lot for taking your time. Get to some of my questions. There's still more on the list. Maybe you can join again in the next Google event, and we'll talk about that. But thanks for your time. Thanks for all your thoughts around that, around AI. I think it was really valuable, and looking forward to the next show with you.
Yeah, this was a ton of fun. Thank you for having me on. Excited to chat again. The good thing is we'll have plenty of stuff to keep talking about because there's so many interesting things happening in the AI space.
Cool. Well, have a good day. Talk to you soon.